Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised Second Edition, second printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 270 of Heroes Unlimited. The power today is Control Static Electricity here in the Major Super Abilities section, the allegedly Major Super Abilities section. This is a weak power, and that is its gimmick. Quote, "This major power sounds a bit lightweight, but in the right hands it can be quite formidable." That's it in a nutshell. Obviously, this is a power that was created for some NPC, or maybe a player character, but it seems more like an NPC. This seems like a Tucker's Kobold situation, where Kevin Sambita, master of the Thinking Man's Game, created a major power with only minor effects, you know, low damage potential, that could nonetheless be used with clever planning and environmental control and blah, 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 to seriously threaten or at least harass some player characters. This is admittedly a superhero comic trope, the character with lesser powers whose cleverness makes up for it, and their minor powers can be used to great effect. The implementation of this in role-playing games is sometimes a little bit frustrating, and you can see exactly why on this page. Here's an example. One of these sub-powers you can get is, quote, "crackling static electrical field. Streams of crackling electricity and sparks of energy encircle the superbeing. The field appears to be a protective force field, or that the individual is supercharged with energy. The spectacle is impressive and frightening, scaring away the average citizen. Horror factor 14. Horror factor 9 to super beings over second level who know better. The crackling field makes an impressive light show but offers no defense except that anybody touching the person is shocked, suffers 1d4 points of damage, and there is a 1 to 50% chance of being knocked off one's feet, losing initiative and one melee attack." So in essence what this is, it's a big, impressive, sparkly, crackling field around you that does barely any damage and gives you a little shock that maybe half the time will knock you over if you touch it. But because it looks like it would hurt you, and it looks like maybe it would be a force field, it has a horror factor of 14, including against inexperienced superheroes of first or second level. This is the GM not playing fair. Because here's the thing, and here's what always bugs me about powers like this, that are like, it's not that powerful, but if you're clever with it, then you can use it as an equalizer against blah, blah, blah. Horror factor of 14. That's the mechanics here, justified by the fact that it looks more impressive than it is. You know what doesn't have a horror factor of 14, or any horror factor at all, in fact? A 24-foot-high goddamn ring of fire. That's what. If you have alter physical structure fire, you can surround yourself with a towering ring of fire that's really hot and will really melt your face right the fuck off. And it has no horror factor. That's not intimidating to regular people, I guess. Because the author didn't care about it then, because you can use a ring of fire to burn the shit out of people. We don't need to worry about rolling for whether regular people run away from a ring of fire. They just do, because it's fire. And superheroes, I guess, are just undaunted by rings of fire. Similarly, there is an electrical field power, energy expulsion electrical field. It does a lot more damage than this does, and it looks pretty impressive. It is also a crackling electrical field, but because it does real damage, there are no rules for bluffing people with it. So if you want to scare people, you're better off with the fake static field that doesn't do anything versus the real field that will actually electrocute them if they touch it. So this is kind of rigged, isn't it? The GM wants the scene where everybody's afraid of and like trying to tactically outsmart the guy with the big impressive field, and then it turns out the field doesn't do anything. And the horror factor reinforces that when really the GM is given that field special privileges. Fields of heat and fire and flame don't normally get that benefit. This page also has a lot of other stuff. Static electricity bolts that can do very little damage, but also like disrupt power tools, it says here, and electrical equipment, which presumably would be something that lots of other blasts and energy explosion could do as well, but it's just not mentioned there because you use it to wreck shit. But the best example of this kind of cheating by the author slash GM is subpower number one, the Joy Buzzer Shock. Quote, "a startling jolt of electricity." Here's the thing. You touch somebody, you do 1 point of damage, but then, quote, "the shocked person loses initiative, and there is a 1 to 50% chance the person will drop anything he slash she is holding, or release an opponent that is being physically restrained, entangled, pinned, or otherwise held." This is the dumbest thing on this page, and here is my objection. The idea is, you're not so powerful, right? You can only sort of zap people for a teeny bit of damage, but it's enough to be startling, and therefore they might drop something. So let's say that you are a clever static-based supervillain, and yes, I know this is an actual character from Villains Unlimited, and someone's grabbed you from behind, and it has you in a full Nelson, then you'll joy buzzer zap them, and comedically, hilariously, they'll let go because they're surprised, and so you'll scamper away to go do mischief another day. Or, you know, some hard-ass weapons expert has got their gun drawn on you and is like, freeze, dirtbag. And so you act like you're going to come quietly, but then you touch them with your foot, and you joy buzzer shock them, and they drop their gun. Ha ha ha. It sure is ironic and interesting how this low-powered villain is giving us such a hard time, fellows. Here's the problem. You're up against supervillains who are throwing fireballs around, who are throwing knives at you, who are hitting you with punches that could buckle a titanium wall. You got maniacs stabbing you with chainsaws. You got ninja masters using chi powers to stop your heart. And none of that is enough to make you drop that fucking gun. But let one guy joy buzz you. Whoops, butterfingers, I dropped my only weapon. Surely something like, for example, being blown up by a grenade would be enough for you to like lose initiative if you're not expecting it. But no, that's a special benefit that only the joy buzzer enjoys because this power is rigged. The point of it is to show how a clever power user can use a lesser power to challenge a greater foe, but it's cheating, and that's dumb. And unnecessary, frankly, because these powers in this game, they're not power balanced. Some of them are better than others. There are ample opportunities to use powers that suck in creative ways, as listeners have pointed out with clock manipulation, as one could presumably do with heightened sense of taste, somehow. Or hey, adapt to environment. If you're my GM, you want to impress me in a superhero campaign, throw me up against an enemy with adapt to environment and show me how clever use of that power can win the day. I will lead the table in a round of applause if you foil us with a villain relying on adapt to environment. Do it with control static electricity, I'm not impressed. It's a scenario hook masquerading as a power. Today we're discussing page 271 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super abilities section, and today we've got a classic, Create Force Field. The ability to create force bubbles, force boxes, walls of force certainly goes back to the Golden Age. You know, Green Lantern does it. Invisible Woman also learned to do it after the writers decided that being invisible was a hard power to get into the mix sometimes. So there was this little period of experimentation in early Fantastic Four where it's like, she can also see things that are invisible because they're hidden? Or how about this? What if she's, like, she can make invisible things visible? Would that be... Or how about this? What if she could just do whatever the fuck she wants? But she's like Green Lantern, but it's invisible energy, so it's like conceptually related. Don't mess with the Invisible Woman. She'll make an invisible pistol and shoot you in the head with an invisible bullet. You should have known. It's right in her name. As I've perhaps implied, Create Force Field is quite a powerful ability in comic books, and these mechanics do bear that out. First of all, you can shoot bolts of force that do low to middling damage. 2d6 apiece, you can shoot two at once if you want, if you've got both your hands free. You either have to shoot the bolts out of your hands, or you can shoot one invisible bolt out of your forehead, but you can't aim it properly. I'm not sure why your forehead exactly. It's funny that in Palladium, it's like you can shoot something out of your hand if you need to aim, but if you don't need to aim or your hands are tied, like the other point of least resistance in the human body, I guess, is for something to come right out of your forehead, which I guess is like the palm of the brain if you think about it. So that's the first thing you can do, the offensive thing you can do. But the main thing you can do is create a defensive force field. There's a boring version of this where you can create like a 200 SDC tight-fitting flexible force field around you, and it's just like a little aura that's protective, and that's it. Nothing interesting to say there. Or you can create a very strong geometrical shape, like a wall or a bubble or a box, with a ton of SDC, 100 times your physical endurance in SDC. So if you've got an average physical endurance of about 11, that's 1,100 SDC you've got at your disposal. You can split it up among multiple force fields if you want. And from there, the details start to get hazy. Here are the like vital statistics of this power. Quote, range, self, parentheses any, or others, parentheses any type excluding the form-fitting armor, 40 feet, parentheses 12.2 meters, per level of experience. It's hard to convey orally on the podcast this sentence because you would think it would have punctuation or some kind of clarifying structure, but it really doesn't. It's three things. Self or others, 40 feet per level of experience. I don't know if this means there are three options. You can do it on yourself, on somebody else, or anywhere within 40 feet per level. Or if it means you can either do it on yourself, or you can do it on anyone else within 40 feet per level. So like that's the range, but it always has to be centered on a person. The reason I ask is because you can create geometric objects, as we discussed before, like a box, with this power. So if you can create it just freestanding anywhere you want, then you could create it to make like an object to stand on if you need to climb up somewhere. Or you could even maybe make like a floating platform possibly. Or, you know, you could make a ramp to do a sweet jump off of with your car. But there's no indication of where you can put this stuff. I'm going to assume that you can do them freestanding, but I don't really know. Duration, 10 minutes plus 2 minutes per level of experience, or until the force field is destroyed or canceled by the field's creator. But it says that a new one can be erected instantly when the old one expires. However, it also says that it takes 2 attacks per melee to raise a force field, which doesn't sound instantaneous to me. So I don't know if maintaining a force field is an exception, and that's instantaneous instead of 2 actions because there was already one there, or if you get to instantaneously out of turn spend 2 actions to maintain the field. After that, there's a bonus. Quote, +2 to create a force field as a shield slash wall to block or parry an attack. There's no further mention of this tactical option where you can use a force field as part of a parry, but apparently you have it. Apparently you get +2 to it, and apparently it's a viable parry despite the fact that, as mentioned, it takes 2 actions to do. So none of this really fits together. But that's not even where our real problems are. Our real problem comes with maximum size. And this is where the author's struggles with geometry, which we saw at the beginning of the superpower section, really come to the fore. Quote, approximately a 40 square foot area plus 10 feet per level of experience. Now this may seem like a niggling objection that I'm making, but please consider. Consider that someone is trying to sell you a swimming pool or a hot tub, and they give you its measurements in square feet. Wouldn't that perhaps give you pause? If you were about to move and you needed boxes of cardboard to pack up your shelf of RPG books rather than boxes of energy to potentially save your life from super criminals, even so, wouldn't you be a little concerned about boxes measured in square feet? You really need cubic measurements, don't you? It's customary to use cubic measurements when measuring things like boxes. However, that's not how we do things here in Heroes Unlimited. Here, we measure three-dimensional objects and effects in square measurements and just kind of assume that they go up like 10, 15 feet. That's kind of what we arrived at in that metaphor about the ripples in the pond that we talked about at the beginning of the chapter. Now, first of all, only SDC is conserved over multiple force fields. Size is not. Furthermore, because we're using square measurements and not cubic measurements as we should be, and because the thickness of the force field has no bearing on its strength, it's almost trivial to make extremely long walls or other effectively two-dimensional objects, other planes. I guess the dumbest thing in this page is just the fact that there's a pretty well standardized block of information that powers need, and create force field really needs all of them, and none of them work. Range, unclear. Duration, works until you have to renew the force field, at which point it becomes pretty hazy. Attacks per melee, 2, which contradicts duration and the implication that you can parry with the force field. A bonus to a tactic that isn't supported by the rest of the power, and then a maximum size for a three-dimensional object measured in terms of two-dimensional measurement. Oh, and by the way, the rate of SDC recovery for force fields, if they do get damaged, is 200 SDC an hour, or 3 per minute. I'll let you work out the math for that one. Just overall, a sloppy power, one that players are bound to be creative with. Like, off the top of my head, what happens if I make a force field in the shape of an arch, like an extended arch with a flat top? And then what if I make another force field that's a big solid block on top of that? And then trick somebody into walking into the arch and then dispel the arch so that the block force field drops on them. Does it work that way? Are force fields solid? Do they have weight? Can they fall? Can they crush? This is, of course, only a trick to get the GM to say, no, that force field stays where you created it, because if I can make freestanding force fields in midair, I am fucking set. This is the only superpower I need. If you can't figure out how to fuck up a campaign with freestanding immovable objects suspended in space, your PC card is revoked. Anyway, overall, a potentially creative power hamstrung by the fact that, for whatever reason, the author just does not want to talk about the three-dimensionality of objects. Today we're discussing page 272 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super ability section. We're in the Ds. This page contains darkness control, disruptive touch, and divine aura. And it might be a weird episode today because I really want to focus on just two lines from this page. They don't even occur together. Just two separate lines, two things that stood out to me that I think are so telling about the strange thought process that goes into this game. And so I'm just going to kind of drop them on you. As we've sometimes talked about on the show, part of the reason that such strange things find their way into the pages of Heroes Unlimited is because they are responses. This is not game design. This is more like reactive game adjudication. Only we don't see the provocation. We don't see what Kevin Sambita's players did or what Kevin Sambita's fans asked to inspire these words. All we see are the words themselves, the answers to questions that we'll never hear. And that's what these two phrases represent, I think. And they represent two kinds of strange answers to unheard questions. Number one is something that happened between editions, an update to the game, something that wasn't there in the previous edition, but something happened in between Heroes Unlimited Revised and Heroes Unlimited Second Edition that made the author, who, as we know, hates to write, hates to add anything to what he's done before, but it made him feel like he just had to break his silence and add a clarification in the text of the rules in the core book. That's a major occasion for a Palladium game. We have one phrase that is just the author addressing a burning question that had arisen in the intervening years between these two editions. Then we have another phrase that is, as far as I can tell, in this power all the way back to its origin. So this is something that must have come from play. This is something that either hypothetically or actually was an issue at Kevin Sambita's table and needed to be addressed in the rules text. So first, let me give you an example of something that must have come from Sambita's table. This comes from the Disruptive Touch power, which is a superpower that allows you to disrupt the nervous system of people to do all kinds of nasty things to them. You can blind them temporarily, paralyze them temporarily, even hit them with a death touch that causes them theoretically to die, actually probably just to lie there in a coma for a little while. As it turns out, surviving a coma is quite easy if you can get any kind of medical help. You can survive in a coma without medical treatment for 1 hour per point of physical endurance in this game, which means if you are an average person who doesn't go to the gym and you are the victim of some kind of just random stabbing or drive-by or whatever, and you're bleeding out on the street, you can live for like 10 hours in a coma there on the sidewalk before somebody helps you. And that somebody really can be anybody. It doesn't need to be a doctor. It doesn't need to be a nurse. The first option for a person who can intervene with you and help you survive a coma is a, quote, unprofessional medical individual. Now, they do have to have medical skills, but they're not a professional in any way. In fact, they're unprofessional. Some kind of crass, belching, insulting individual who took first aid once years ago, maybe learned CPR in high school in a health class, but they're just the worst. They're making hurtful comments about your body. They're drinking, they're not washing their hands. You can see the Cheeto dust on their fingers as they tend to your wounds. Even then, you've got like a 28% chance to live through this goddamn coma. And if they don't succeed, they could take you to the hospital at their leisure, or they could try again, whatever. You've got hours and hours, so the death touch is, it's not a death touch. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is the special notes at the end under the heading Other Abilities and Bonuses. These are just little clarifications and additional bonuses, things that the author thought, as soon as he finished writing this power, okay, bullet points. Here are things players are gonna ask about. I need to just address these real quick at the end. Okay, number one, you get a bonus to your physical endurance for having a death touch. I don't know why, but just for whatever reason, the author thought it's a natural connection. Death fingers, strong and beefy. Likewise, similar train of thought. You get a plus 1d6 times 10 bonus to SDC. So as we've discussed before, let's say you roll a six on this. This means that the fact that you have death fingers increases your physical toughness as much as being a master of all known physical pursuits for some reason. I invite those of you on Twitter who argued that the SDC you get from being able to fly makes sense because you have to survive high altitudes. Congratulations. Well done. No prize earned. Explain this shit. Explain how death fingers protect you from a hail of bullets. I dare you to at me. Number three, you get a plus 10 to save versus coma slash death. I'm not, again, sure why. I guess maybe a lot of people in your vicinity get saved from comas, since your death touch is not really all that. So maybe you've sort of seen it before. And so when you fall into a coma, before you, you know, sink into the icy numbness at the threshold of death, you can sort of prime yourself mentally for like, here's how I wake up from this coma. Let me envision it and just Like, I'm not going to be conscious, but let me just prepare myself. You know, it's like if you need to wake up for an early appointment before you go to bed, you can kind of like stoke yourself up. Or like if you want to have a sex dream about a particular person, you can kind of like try to gin up some, I don't know, maybe that's just me. But anyway, you know how to do it. I don't know why. You're super, super good at comas. Nobody's better at comas than you. Next thing, of course, obvious question that a player would ask. Poisons, toxins, and drugs have only half their usual effect. Naturally, death fingers. You've already got this poison coursing through your hands and fingers and wrists and stuff. So I guess it's harder for you to be drugged. I don't really see the connection. But in any case, you're resistant to poisons, toxins, and drugs, and magic potions. Oh, wait, shit, I'm sorry, I didn't read the next line. Hold on. It says here that magic potions have full effect. So, for those of you who are raising your hands asking, yes, magic potions, of which there is exactly one in this game, do have full effect on you, despite the fact that you've got death fingers. I'm sorry, I didn't write these rules. I know you were rubbing your hands together with glee, your deadly hands, like, oh, now that I've got death fingers, I'm immune to magic potions for sure. Not so fast. Kevin Sambita's got that angle covered. He's always one step ahead. Speaking of which, maybe the most important provision in this power, for my money, certainly important to the author, was the very first one listed, impervious to his own touch. Now, this is a decision I disagree with. If you're fighting someone with death fingers, and let's not forget, they can be used for many purposes. I mean, death is just one of the many options at the literal fingertips of the villain who's got this power. He can blind you, he can paralyze you, whatever, but he's got to touch you. He's got to reach out those death fingers and grab for your face or your chest or whatever. And I would love to have a scene in my superhero campaign where a clever hero who doesn't want to be death touched, as Who Among Us does, would be like, let me grab that wrist and push his hand back and touch his own chest with it. And then he's hoisted by his own death fingers. Or use trickery. You can't see it, but I'm tapping my temple right now. Like a smart guy, use trickery against him. Be like, while he's going to reach out for the death touch on you, be like, oh, hold on, just, you have something on your, there's something on your chin, right? I think in your beard there's, and then he reaches up, touches his chin. Oh shit, I death touched myself. That's the kind of superhero action I'm looking for in a role-playing game. And unfortunately, Kevin Sambita just cut it right off at the pass. It can't happen now. He's impervious to his own death touch. Maybe Kevin Sambita got taken in by this once or twice. Maybe his, during the playtest, maybe the players took out Mr. Deathfingers a little bit faster than Kevin Sambita planned. And then he went home furious with his notebook, the events of the campaign, fired up the word processor and was like, never again, not on my watch. Tap, tap, tap. Impervious to his own touch. Cannot death touch himself in the chin, guys. But all right, so that's number one. That's the thing that was playtested out, figured out, and it's in the original rules for disruptive touch. The other power on this page, darkness control, also has a note on it that I think is very interesting and was added between editions. Darkness control, for those of you not familiar with the power, it allows you to create an impenetrable darkness. It can be very tiny, or it can be quite big, you know, like 40 feet diameter, gets wider and wider as you level up. It's very dark darkness. It's total darkness. You know, if you have like infrared or thermo imaging or something, you can see heat within it, but like light amplification night vision doesn't work. Regular night vision doesn't work. Can't see shit in this darkness. Total blackness, total darkness. So you can make yourself a big bubble of that. You can see in it only like 30 feet. So again, comical possibilities spring to mind. If you run more than 30 feet away from Mr. Darkmaster, he can't see shit either. But anyway, not too bad. So you can do that. You can make that darkness. You can see in the darkness, basically. And then you get one more power called Shadow Meld. And allow me to read to you the original version of Shadow Meld from Heroes Unlimited Revised. Quote, the ability to become invisible in shadows or darkness. The only requirement is that the shadow or area of darkness must be man-sized. Exposure to light will dispel the darkness slash shadow and reveal the character. Now, naturally, this raises many questions. I can understand why players were confused about this. I can create impenetrable darkness. I mean, I can make the darkness so dark, in fact, that people who can normally see in the dark still can't see me in the dark. So this ability to hide in the darkness, already of dubious utility, because what we're talking about here is an ability to hide in the darkness as long as there's no light, seems like a thing everybody can do. Seems like the birthright of all humans. The fact that light ruins this seems like if I were looking for someone in a dark room where I couldn't see because it were dark, I think what I would probably do is get like a flashlight or a lamp or maybe my cell phone and look for them with light. And if I do that, then I completely fuck up this power. This shadow meld is of no avail against the power of the cell phone screen. So what good is this power? What is it for? Because I could just make darkness. That's my thing. I can just make darkness and nobody can see in this darkness except me, barely. So all these questions are filtering to Kevin Sambita down through the years. Finally, 14 years later, it's time for Heroes Unlimited Second Edition. And he's doing his, let's call it an edit, let's call it a revision of the game. And he's rereading all this text. And obviously he has his notes and he has his memories of his conversations he's had with fans at conventions and things like that. And they've been asking him again and again for 14 years, for a decade and a half. They've been asking him, what is the point of Shadow Meld? So he added a line of rules clarification to explain Shadow Meld. Here's the new, updated, revised, logical version of Shadow Meld. Quote, the ability to become invisible in shadows or darkness. The only requirement is that the shadow or area of darkness must be man-sized or bigger. Exposure to light will dispel the darkness shadow and reveal the character. And here's the new part. Ideal for hiding. Done. It's a good day's work at the old word processor at Palladium Books. The people asked, for 15 years they asked. Today they were answered. What is Shadow Meld good for? It's for hiding, guys. It's for hiding in the dark. As long as there's no light and no one can see you, you can hide. I feel like this one is the dumbest thing on this page because we had to wait for it. I think that waiting 15 years for an explanation that invisibility is good for hiding, that's gotta take the cake for this page. Today we're discussing page 273 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Major Super Abilities section, and there's a power on today's page called Force Aura, about which I don't have a ton to say. It's basically like Eunice the Untouchable, if you know that X-Men villain. It's a force field that like keeps everything away from you. Basically, it makes you able to like hit really hard. It gives you an armor rating, so stuff tends to bounce off you, but because it's always pushing away, you can't touch anything while you've got the force field up. Eunice and his force field, it's one of those things that works in comic books because comic book writers want it to work, right? They want to tell a story about a guy who can't touch anything, so the powers are just going to do that. When you introduce powers like that to a role-playing game, you've got players who want to like futz with the power. They want to outthink the power and make it do what they want it to do, oftentimes to like win the encounter, achieve their objectives. So they're prone to do things that you wouldn't put in a comic book because they're too stupid even for comic books. Heroes Unlimited, though, for all the shit that I've talked about it, low these 273 pages, really understands players and how they behave. Heroes Unlimited sees that shit coming from a mile away. And sometimes they put provisions into powers to either block or, in some wonderful cases, facilitate stupid player character tricks to manipulate superpowers. And today is one of those days. Today is one of the days they got it right. It's still dumb, but I do love it. It's a great example of how Heroes Unlimited gets role-playing. It comes at the very end of the Force Aura power under limitations. And for the most part, this is about how, while you got your field up, you can't really touch anything. And for example, if you want to use a weapon, it's got to be a big weapon because your field goes out like 2 feet, right? And if you've extended your aura to protect multiple people, yourself and somebody else, then the field is immobile. So you're kind of stuck in place and you can't reach anything more than 2 feet away from you. Now here are the specific rules for that limitation. Quote, when multiple people are protected, the aura must be dropped to move, touch anything, to pick up and use weapons or tools, unless they are giant-sized, but such items are used at a penalty of -1 to strike and or parry, or to perform most skills. Did you notice that little caveat in there about giant-sized weapons and tools? Why would you bring this up? How often are you in a situation where you're on the side of the road, let's say your car is broken down, and you want to go grab a lug wrench to change your tire, but you're in a dangerous neighborhood, maybe there's some supervillains after you, so you want to keep your force field up, you want to keep your force aura going. How likely are you really to just happen to find that there's a 3-foot-long lug wrench around? Not at all likely, right? Or like, I gotta disable a bomb, but I want to keep my force aura up so that the bomb doesn't kill me if it goes off because I fuck up my mechanics roll. So looking around, oh hey, let me just grab this 3-foot-long screwdriver I have lying around. It's unlikely to happen accidentally. I tell you what will happen though, and that's why this is dumb, but it's brilliant in its dumbness. This won't happen accidentally, but it will fucking happen on purpose, because if you've got mechanical skills and you've got this power, you know you can't use your skill because you can't use tools unless they are gigantic novelty-sized tools. So you're going to carry them around. You're going to take them with you. Isn't that like the perfect player character solution to this problem? Let me have a big backpack full, if I'm like a gearhead character who's got Force Aura, with a gigantic, with 3-foot versions of like my wrench and my drill and my screwdriver and everything. And then I'll fuck up all the GM's plans because I can disable bombs and hijack spaceships and hotwire cars and all my mechanical stuff while my force field's up because I got these long-ass tools. And I sort of love that Heroes Unlimited does not categorically say you can't use tools while you're in your impenetrable protective cocoon. It says, oh, sure, you can do it if you have gigantic novelty-sized tools. You just take a minus one. And obviously, that's for fine manipulation. Honestly, a lot of Eunice the Untouchable's problems would have been solved by just one of those, like, two-handed, you know, like the little extender, the claw on the little extender that you can push together and it extends out and you can grasp something at the end kind of awkwardly and, like, pull it back to you. A useless novelty item, you know, just filler trash at the local Spencer's for most of us, but not for Eunice the Untouchable. If he had that thing, 90% of his angst gone in one evening, one trip to Spencer's, he'd be mostly set. The remaining 10%, you know, living without the intimacy of human touch, not much Spencer's can do about that. Although, you know, now that I think about it, as I look at the Spencer's website, because of course I am, I mean, look, I've wanted to help Eunice for a long time. I've been reading comic books for many years. They do have this naughty category you can go to. And they got this floral print vibrator here that I think he's not going to get a lot of use out of. Although, you know, if he could have them maybe custom build a 3-foot novelty version and then find the right lady, then who knows? But, you know, they've also got some, like, novelty sexy games here, so maybe something like that would be nice for Eunice. Pin the Junk on the Hunk poster I see here. A steal at $12.99. Now, obviously, he can't play that because of the force field, but now we're back to the two-hand claw. Nothing sexier than playing Pin the Junk on the Hunk from all the way across the room. That's like, it's a little far away, it's a little blurry. Leave something to the imagination. Or there are some books of pleasure coupons here, which he couldn't redeem immediately, but could kind of give him hope. Like, that would be a nice gift from Eunice's girlfriend, maybe, just to give him those and be like, hey, you want a rain check on human intimacy? Because, you know, we'll find a cure someday for force field. Don't think of our love as frustrating and doomed. Think of it as accruing interest. Anyway, if you've got this force field power, I think carrying around giant-sized tools and weapons so that you can fight crime carrot top style with a big bag full of novelty implements is a clever player character idea, and I appreciate Heroes Unlimited for penalizing it, but allowing it. I think that's just the right balance. So, it's dumb, but if it allows me to see Eunice the Untouchable fixing his car with a 3-foot-long wrench, I'm for it. Today we're discussing page 274 of Heroes Unlimited, and it's time to talk about gem powers. We are in the major super abilities section, and this one really is major. It's a heavy hitter. It's also probably the most consumerist of the superpowers. Maybe no match for the robotics section, which is just a capitalist nightmare. But gem powers, it's a different kind of capitalism. This is the kind of capitalism I'm more familiar with, having come from Humboldt County. This is liberal capitalism. This is like what I want in my life is peace and balance and inclusion. And there are products that I know if I buy them and fill my house with them and make it really hard to dust in my house, then eventually those spiritual qualities will just sort of descend upon me. Sometimes those objects are crystals in my experience, and that's really what this power is. It encompasses all kinds of precious stones. And what gem powers allow you to do is collect these stones, and then when you have them, you can tap them to give yourself superpowers temporarily. Now, when it comes to the big superpowers, those require appropriately big ticket precious stones. And so we're really talking about like high-end upper class jewelry. Like if you've got a diamond to draw on, you can give yourself invulnerability or wingless flight. So that kind of connects to one archetype you could use for this power, which is the sort of socialite who's got all the different like rings and necklaces and stuff that have got these precious stones embedded in them, and then you can touch them and give yourself a variety of different superpowers, and it costs a ton of money. And those are fine. But what I prefer, given my own background, are the crystals that I associate more with like New Age stuff, with like flaky paganism, that kind of thing. And the winner in that category, a true classic, is the amethyst crystal. Quote, any of the following psionic powers can be drawn from this crystal. Detect psionics, hypnotic suggestion, and meditation. The use of each one counts as one usage of the gem and contributes to its destruction. Average gem cost, 4d4 times $10 per small stone, triple for large stones. So, we're talking about $100 for a small amethyst. And by the way, these all have to be like professionally cut gems. I mentioned this is a consumerist power. You can't just go buy, you know, cracked, flawed You can't go get like diamond chips. You can't go get like a diamond saw blade or drill head and touch it and become invulnerable. It doesn't work that way. Quote, all stones must be free of any serious flaw and must be cut and polished to have a faceted slash crystal appearance. Chips and slivers cannot be used, only whole stones in crystal cut. So you do have to go down to your local jewelry store or glorified knickknack shop where they play flute music in the case of the town I come from, and go in there and buy some proper commercial jewels to use these powers. Amethysts, of course, traditionally give you powers of insight and clarity, used for all kind of mental exercises and spiritual purposes. And that kind of fits with detect psionics or hypnotic suggestion. But it fits best of all with meditation, except that there actually isn't a meditation psionic power. This puzzled me for a while because I was looking around through this book for meditation. I couldn't find it. And I thought, like, maybe it's in Beyond the Supernatural. Maybe it's in Rifts and they kind of forgot that it wasn't in this book anymore. But no, meditation isn't a psionic power. Meditation is an ability that all psionics have. You won't have it because you don't have psionic powers. Gem powers are not psionic, even though they can give you psionic powers. Meditation is an ability psionics have that allows them to meditate and gain internal strength points, which we'll talk about in more detail in a later section, but they're the currency you spend to do psionics. Now, meditation, of course, has its own rewards. It's a great way to tell people they can't talk to you right now that makes you sound superior to them. But in Heroes Unlimited, primarily what it's for is to get internal strength points, which you don't need because you don't spend internal strength points to use psionics. You spend precious gems to do psionics. For example, while a true psionic would use their internal strength points representing their discipline and connection to their own psyche to achieve empathy with others and experience their emotions at first hand, you would go to the jewelry store and buy yourself a garnet and then use it to essentially pay for human empathy at a rate of something like $85 per minute. So as far as I can tell, there are basically two reasons that you would ever meditate with your gem powers if you're like a crystal person. Number one, you just want to feel psychically powerful because you've got basically nothing to spend this ISP on. This is consistent with my experience of crystal people. If you could go to the local flute music playing crystal store and buy an amethyst for $100, and that would allow you to do like 3 good minutes of meditation and just feel like, yeah, I really felt something. I felt like I was in touch with something bigger than myself. I feel like I really transcended my petty concerns. I definitely know people who would go buy a whole jar of amethysts, like spend their whole paycheck on it and just pound those things for no reason. Maybe the more pressing reason to meditate and collect your inner peace and discipline, though, is to then weaponize it and use it to psychically attack people who've been sabotaging you in your life. This is another thing you'll hear a lot about if you hang out with crystal people, because sometimes they're having a good week and they're just meditating, you know, for the joy of it. Like, look, I bought all these crystals, I'm burning all this incense, and like, I just feel great. You know, I had to buy a lot of crystals, couldn't make my car insurance payment, but on the upside, I am extremely wise now. But then sometimes crystal people have a bad week and it's like that ex-boyfriend or like that person at work or like, God forbid, your parents who maybe don't approve of your crystal-centric lifestyle, they've pushed you too far. You tried to, you know, namaste them or whatnot. Now you got to get revenge. The only way you know how, psychically. And if you go on the internet, you will find lots of prescriptions for how to do like bullshit magic and psychic practices to attack the people who have ruined your life, who have made your sustainable crystal-based lifestyle somehow unrewarding for you with sabotage. And this game actually supports that too, because of the biomanipulation psychic power. Normally, all you got to do is spend crystals to use psychic powers or superpowers or whatever if you got gem powers. But with biomanipulation, you can extend the duration of the power by spending extra ISP, which you have no way to get unless you've got it stored up from meditating. So let's say you're a crystal person, and let's say someone has been raining on your parade, on your path to enlightenment. And as a result, you want to afflict them with unquenchable itching or blindness. Normally, this would only last for 10 minutes. But if you go out and buy a bunch of bulk amethysts and really like crystal carbo load for the ordeal to come, on like amethyst after amethyst after amethyst, just sit there fuming, angrily meditating, grabbing an amethyst, just draining it to dust, throwing it aside, grab another amethyst, give me that enlightenment. Then you can pump your ISP way, way up, and you can spend it at 6 points a pop to extend the duration of like the blindness or deafness or whatever that you afflict this other person with. You need a star sapphire for this as well, but only one of those. Star sapphire is pricey, maybe a little rich for your blood if you're a crystal person, but you'll figure it out. Probably what you'll do is go buy a star sapphire from someone with the intention of flipping it later because you looked up its price on the internet, but then you can't find a buyer. So you put the star sapphire on your Etsy page where it never sells, and then it just sits around your house and you never sell anything on Etsy, even though it's listed on your taxes as your primary means of support. Why do I know so many crystal people? Anyway, both the dumbest thing on this page and my favorite thing on this page, I think, is the crystal person potential of this power. There's no more like accurate and compelling image of this lifestyle than going out and buying a bunch of amethysts and expending them to gain the meditation power so that you are literally paying by the minute to expand your consciousness. So for that reason, this is the dumbest and my favorite thing on the page. Today we're discussing page 275 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the major super abilities section, but unfortunately, I know we've been having a lot of fun here on the podcast with these superpowers, but today we have to talk about something really serious, something really tragic that I've watched unfold over many years, over a decade now, I guess, in professional wrestling, which is, of course, one of the art forms I love, and I'm very sad to see it infect role-playing games as well. I'm referring, of course, to Big Show Syndrome. This is so named after Big Show, aka Paul White, aka The Giant. A very tall professional wrestler, huge, technically a giant, but unlike his predecessor in giganticness, Andre the Giant, Big Show just is not an intimidating presence in the ring. He is not a wrestler that others fear. You would think, at 7 feet tall, at over 300 pounds, that Big Show would be a terrifying force, an unstoppable menace, as Andre was before him. But no. Big Show Syndrome is a sad situation in which what should be an intimidating, overpowering monster, despite his huge size, just doesn't somehow evoke the fear that he deserves. And this is a syndrome that unfortunately affects giant superheroes in Heroes Unlimited, as we see on the power on today's page, Growth. Growth is your classic giant superhero superpower. Quite simple. It makes you big. You can increase your height by 2 feet for every point of physical endurance. You get heavier, tougher, stronger, all the things you'd expect. You get some miscellaneous bonuses and penalties. For example, you get a bonus to hit, and you move faster because you've got a longer stride, but you take a penalty to dodge, and your physical endurance is set to a minimum of 14, so you can always grow at least 28 feet, even if you rolled really bad stats. All of that's acceptable, all of that's fine. The tragedy comes in with another subsidiary benefit of the power, which is that you gain a horror factor of 9 when you are 8 feet tall, and then you add 1 to that horror factor for each 6 feet of additional height. Now, what you've got to understand is, I haven't been talking about it a lot, but many, many superpowers get a horror factor in this edition of Heroes Unlimited. I'm talking stretching. I'm talking force aura, like we talked about the other day. I'm talking ice powers. If you cover yourself in snow to fight crime, like Iceman did back in the day, you still got a horror factor. All superpowers are scary. It's the 90s. No matter how many bright colors you wear, no matter how much underwear you wear on the outside of your clothes, no matter how stupid your haircut or absurd your backstory, we've all just agreed it's the 1990s. We wear trench coats and we cower in fear from one another as though we are all fucking Dirty Harry and not Mr. Miracle. And surely, of all powers to get in on that action, that sweet horror action, you would expect the giant to be right there. It's very intuitive. Getting attacked by a big person is scary. Getting attacked by an unnaturally big person is extra scary because it's unnatural. Seems like a no-brainer. But in fact, if you look at the horror benchmarks in this game, the giant is not nearly as scary as they should be. Now, I say horror benchmarks. It's not that convenient in the book. I mean, we don't get a hierarchical ranking of different levels of horror so that we get a sense of like how scary a horror factor 8 is compared to a horror factor 12. Heroes Unlimited is not here to hold your hand. If you want a well-organized scale to measure things with, you got to assemble it yourself, which is what I did. I did that work. I searched for horror factor. I found all the relevant entries in the hierarchy of horror, and this tedious exercise confirmed me in my belief that giants are not as scary as they should be, because since your scariness depends on your height, if you're a giant, you can look straight across, one-to-one, based on your height, what are you as scary as? And it is not favorable to giants. Let's go step by step. Let's grow that giant, starting at 13 feet, and talk about how scary they are according to this game. First of all, just to set a baseline, think about an 8-foot person bumping into you at some kind of social event, and you look over your shoulder and you're like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. And then you look way up and there they are, 8 feet tall, and they look pissed. How scared are you? Okay, 8 feet tall, towering above you. How scared are you when they look at you angry? Okay, now with that feeling firmly in mind, let's blow that up to 13 feet tall. And that's where we start. A 13-foot tall motherfucking giant is as scary as a known gun enthusiast who has never done anything with his life. If you go to the hardware weapons expert, if you look at the horror factor there for people knowing that you have guns, you'll find that a first level hardware weapons expert, which means someone who is known to have guns but is not known to have ever used them or in fact done anything, less of a gunslinger, more of a gun fancier, sort of a basement dwelling gun otaku, this guy is as scary as a 13-foot tall human being. Alternately, also as scary as a 13-foot tall giant, the sound of something moving. If you look at the invisibility power, which we'll get to soon in the podcast, you'll find that when invisible characters just like move shit around and it's like, oh, who moved that pot? Who tapped the wall? That's as scary as a 13-foot tall giant bearing down on you. Let's say that's not scary enough for you. You want a little more respect, so you pump up your height. Let's go to 18 feet tall. 18-foot tall giant, angry, cracking their giant meaty knuckles, looking down at you. That's as scary as a person with the stretching super ability. So like a Mr. Fantastic or Plastic Man type. Now, I'm not going to claim that Mr. Fantastic's powers aren't all fucked up. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not saying that if he came at me with that big stretchy face, that big stretchy body, sounding like a rubber band, I wouldn't be a little freaked out. But especially for a superhero in a superhero world, I know superpowers are a thing. So I'm not like, oh my God, you're melting in my direction. I'm like, it's a stretchy guy. There's a basic level of body horror there, but I dispute that that is scarier than an 18-foot tall assailant. 18 feet. Think about looking up 18 feet and seeing the face of the person who is about to crush you. It's harrowing, but okay, obviously not harrowing enough. We're at a horror factor 10 right now, which means this 18-foot tall behemoth only has about a 50-50 chance of scaring an average person. So obviously he's got to up his game. Let's take it up to a 23-foot tall giant. 23 feet, almost 5 times the height of a normal person. Dude is over 2 stories tall. This guy who's about to crush you, we're now measuring his height in architectural terms. What's as scary as that, according to Heroes Unlimited? How about a butterfly swarm? Yes, our old friend, the butterfly swarm. From Bug Rates, remember? You can get affected by a swarm of butterflies because it's fluttering everywhere. They might get in my mouth. They might get in my hair. These fanciful butterflies. That's as scary as being attacked by a 23-foot tall individual, according to this game. Okay, obviously that's not tall enough. All right, let's amp it up further. 33 feet tall. Now over 3 stories tall. According to the controlled darkness power, being in total darkness, like the kind created by the controlled darkness superpower, horror factor 13, just the same as having a 33-foot tall individual stomp up to you looking for a fight. Total equivalence. And I get it, the unknown is scary, but like, really? You walk into a dark warehouse in the middle of the night and it's pitch black and you can't see shit. It's just the deepest, deepest darkness. Windows have been boarded up. It's spooky in there, right? You're scared. You're listening to every noise. You're jumping every time you think that you feel something, like a little disturbance in the air. Then you finally find a light switch, you pull it, and you find that in the warehouse is a 33-foot tall, angry-looking motherfucker, and your emotional state is flat. Like, you know, they say the anticipation is worse. They say that fear is the scariest thing, but in this case, it's exactly even. This is just as scary as having no idea what was in this warehouse. I'm in a state of blessed equilibrium. No, you're not. I don't think a dark room is as scary as a giant. And as evidence, I submit to you the fact that there is no fairy tale about Jack and his brave defeat of the dark fucking room. So, all right, if being as scary as the dark is not scary enough for you, you have to go that last step up that's available to you. As an average giant with average physical endurance, you can get to about 38 feet tall. That's where you max out. And being 38 feet tall makes you as scary as a harmless field of sparkles, as we see under control static electricity. The extremely weak superpower of control static electricity allows you to surround yourself with little impressive sparkles just a harmless little show-off sparkler attack, that's as scary as a 38-foot tall giant. But that's not even the worst it gets. You're going to love this one. Let's say that you're an exceptional giant. Let's say that you were blessed with an exceptional constitution and you can grow even larger in an effort to get the goddamn respect you deserve. You go to 43-foot tall. Now over four stories tall, you're having trouble individually picking out the people you're trying to scare. You're just mean mugging the ground. It's to be understood, anybody who's down there, I'm looking at you all in a general way. And God forbid one of these little peons, one of these little ants should individually piss you off. You know, God forbid somebody's out at a social event and they, you know, bump somebody behind their back and they're like, oh, sorry, turn around, look up, 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 four stories up. Here's this vengeful god of a man about to rain his wrath down upon them. That's pretty fucking scary. It's as scary as, according to this game, remember from Alter Physical Structure, colon liquid, a water behemoth who is 18 feet tall. 18 feet tall. You got almost 30 feet on this water behemoth, and it's as scary as you are. Why? Because it's made of water? The second worst of the classical elements? Give me a break. This one isn't even apples and oranges like the others, where it's like, oh, what's really scarier? A guy who's all freaky and stretchy, or somebody who's really big? It's just two big guys. One of them is 30 feet bigger than the other, which for my money means he's more intimidating. This is not, you know, an abstract exercise in evaluating danger levels. This is gut level, pit of your stomach, feel like I gotta get out of here. And this tiny behemoth is as scary as the giant, despite being less than half his size. Just disgraceful. And I don't know, suppose you can get all the way up to 48 feet tall. Nearly five stories now. We're getting into like King Kong territory here. And according to Heroes Unlimited, with their fucking bravado, with their fucking balls of steel, according to them, a King Kong-sized monster of a man is as intimidating as a very scary werewolf. A lycanthrope, a werewolf who rolled a really good horror factor. This is not even good game design. This is not even good horror writing. Think if you had a movie that crosses over The Amazing Colossal Man and the werewolf. Obviously, you don't put them in a fight against each other because a 50-foot tall man is way scarier than anything, man, dog, or both, below the 10-foot mark. It's just a simple matter of size category, a simple matter of weight class. This is why there was never a King Kong versus Wolfman, even though there's money in that main event. There's no way to pay it off. And yes, I know there was a Godzilla versus Wolfman, but number one, that was a fan film that was not released, and number two, they made the Wolfman giant, and number three, logic doesn't apply to Godzilla, he's the king of monsters. My point is this, horror factor is wildly inconsistent across this game. For all that it gets applied to, it's seemingly every superpower throughout this section, every time the number seems to represent something different. And the fact that you can be multiple stories tall, picking fist fights with regular people, and they're not as scared of you as they are of like the dark or butterflies, just shows that this like subsystem, this horror factor thing, was not ready for the spotlight. The scale makes no goddamn sense, and it leads to this tragic affliction of Big Show syndrome, where in many cases, the giant hero or villain towering over the battlefield, who should be like the center of a combat set piece, is actually going to be one of the least scary characters there. And that's a real shame, in fiction as it is in life. Let's all pour one out for Paul White. Poor guy. I mean, I know he's fabulously rich and has had a great life in many ways, and he's huge and could crush us, but he should have been Andre. Join me next time for more perplexing inconsistencies in the way that this fictional world works on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.